Louise McSharry on 2FM.
With Cadbury Brunch. When you need a proper break, brunch.
Now I am joined by the wonderful Connor Behan.
Hello, Louise. How are you?
I'm well. You really were like, hello, Normandy. Or Normandy? Hello. Somewhere.
Louise, with the points from Ireland. Good morning.
Exactly. Thank you. That's my brain couldn't even get there. I'm so tired. My children, they won't get up at a reasonable hour. It's just like at this stage, it's actually ridiculous. My brain is barely functioning. But I am so excited to talk to you about this morning's stories for pop culture because there is a lot going on. And unfortunately, we have to talk about what is going on with Sia. Yeah.
The one and only Sia rarely shows her face. Pop singer and songwriter to the stars, has been in the music business for a very long time before she became pop star Sia, as we know. She's been working on a film called Music. She dropped her trailer for it this week. The film is due out next year. She has been talking about this film for a while. There's even been songs released this year that come from the soundtrack that people would have heard.
Because the film is her film, written, directed, music, the whole thing, it's her.
Yeah, and the album that will come out next year is a Sia album, but it's all songs from the film. So like, okay, fine, fair enough. Expand your horizon, Sia. Good for you. So the film stars Maddie Ziegler, who people will know from a lot of Sia's videos and the reality show Dance Moms, and she's building a career of her own. She's a great dancer, performer, etc. She's playing a non-verbal autistic girl called Music, who is the title character of the film. And as you mentioned, Sia is taking control of every aspect of the film, and also the film stars Kate Hudson and Leslie Odom Jr., who people would know, of course, mainly from the musical Hamilton. So that kind of started to generate criticism online when the trailer dropped, because people pointed out that, you know, someone who's able-bodied and neurotypical was playing a non-verbal autistic character. And a lot of people, I will say, you know, there's this characterization online that if you misstep, you get quote-unquote cancelled or called out. Whereas actually a lot of the responses, while people were kind of frustrated, were very clearly going into, hey, here's why this wouldn't land. We, as, you know, autistic people don't love how we're represented in film and television. And right off the bat, this seems to be going this way. And Sia, who interestingly doesn't often tweet, who doesn't often tweet for herself, a lot of her tweets are signed CAHQ, as in, buy my album vinyl, CAHQ.
Yeah.
But this day of all days, Sia wanted to weigh in and started responding to things saying, I spent years researching this. You haven't seen the film. You don't realize that I've cast people in other roles elsewhere in the film. She talked about how she had originally hired a young girl who was autistic to play the lead character, and it was too overwhelming for her, so she went to Maddie Ziegler. But then people pulled up interviews where she talked about wanting Maddie for this film for years, but just none of it really made sense.
But also, even if that was true, one autistic girl does not represent all autistic girls. Like, you know, autism is a spectrum.
Exactly.
So, you know, just in the way that if you tried one, I don't know, female actress for a role, if she, you know, if it wasn't for her, it didn't work for her, that doesn't mean all female actresses shouldn't be considered for that role.
Absolutely. You're like, I wanted a blonde woman to play this role. Oh, that one blonde one was bad. It'll have to be brunette.
Yes.
No, you would go, this is what I have in mind, or this is what I need to do, or whatever.
Or this is what's appropriate.
So it's just odd. Like, when people say you haven't seen the film, you can't judge, I understand in the abstract where they're coming from. But also, particularly with films, trailers are used to sell a film, set out their stall, and give you, in general, an idea of whether you want to watch it. Like, I could play you 3 or 4 trailers for movies back to back about just whatever. You might go, that one's not my vibe. Ooh, that looks good. Oh, I'm not, that doesn't look like a good trailer, but it could be good. So we as consumers in general, we make those decisions anyway. And if it is a film that features a portrayal of autism that does not land with a community of people who understand why they want better representation, the trailer is actually a very good example of why they may already have an issue with it or feel like this film is not going to do justice by them.
Yeah.
And I thought I can understand some of Sia's frustration. She's obviously spent time putting a film together, which is no mean feat, but to fire back in the way she did and to talk down to people and tweet things like, oh, F word, I'm F-A-D-F, so frustrated, no one has seen my film
yet.
This
is BS.
It's also like, well, why don't you reach out to these people and go, I'll send you a screener and let's have a dialogue about this.
Yeah.
It was just very like celebrity throws toys at a prom instead of going, oh, maybe I've missed a mark, let's see what we can do, or let's have that conversation. I don't know, which is very poor form.
Yeah, it's just been very badly handled. And the thing is, like, I'm not autistic, but I watched the trailer and I was like, ooh, that doesn't seem right to me. But then the fact is, you know, many, many, many autistic people did respond and weren't happy with it and didn't get a good feeling about it. And as you said, very reasoned and calm language said, what made you decide to cast someone? I'm genuinely interested in what your thinking was. And yeah, her responses were just so defensive and unpleasant. I saw an autistic actor kind of saying, I'm available, like I was available. And she said, well, maybe you're not a good actor.
Yeah, because like, I think Sia had put out some kind of open call because she said at one point, but I cast all these people in these roles instead of having
She said she cast like, so she had cast people who weren't neurotypical.
Yeah.
She had cast trans people. You know, she was basically saying that the cast and the production was diverse, as if that would kind of make up for it. And that's good. I mean, I think everybody's like, that's good, great, you know, more of that, please. But it still doesn't mean.
And also, if you bring it up in relation to being asked, hey, I'm not sure if this works here. Like, I understand the internet doesn't always allow for nuance, and people can get a little bit, can be very quick to far off and go, you got that wrong. But it's also like, even if that is the case, I think when you are particularly a celebrity who has backing to make a film that will get more attention than all those people on Twitter will individually, you have to have a little bit of grace and go, oh, let me just maybe try and play this a bit better. I will say Aoife Dooley, who's a great illustrator and author, she's Irish and she's autistic.
Yeah, we've had her on the show.
She did a great thread about this on Twitter that is worth checking out on her Twitter page as well. She kind of went through and she kind of waited to the day after. So she gives you like a better, I guess, rundown of how it went and her perspective. And even Sia mentioned an organization called Autism Speaks, which I know some autistic people have said, actually, they don't really speak for all of us. They don't have the best values. So that is worth checking out too, because obviously you and I both are speaking about this kind of from a bit of a remove. And it's like anything, like, yeah, online things can get heated, but like if you are willing to go to stuff like this on Twitter and open mind, you learn stuff. I have learned so much from people coming forward and talking about this kind of thing or what it's like to be trans or even other aspects. Even though I'm gay, there's parts of being LGBTQ that I didn't really get until people started talking about it more. Yeah. So like, I just, it's cringy. And I just, you kind of think Sia would know better, but also, I don't know, these tweets do not paint her in the best light.
Well, like, I guess it's just, if I made a film, if I decided I was going to make a film and the main character was going to be a gay man, and I am very passionate about supporting gay men and I really want to make something which celebrates gay men. If I released a trailer and a significant number of gay men said, hey, don't love that.
Me DMing your girl.
Not like that doesn't really sit right with me. It doesn't feel consistent with the way I'd like to be represented. If hundreds of them came to me and said that, I'd be like, oh, okay, sorry, I've obviously got something wrong here. And you know, no one is questioning the motivation. It's the it's a conversation. And yeah, she's just, we've said it repeatedly. It's just a real shame that she has responded to the criticism in this way. And I don't think it's going to look good for her in the future. But as you said, we are two neurotypical people discussing this, and there are lots and lots of people who are autistic who are speaking about this on the internet at the moment, and it's definitely worth your time going and hearing what they have to say. In much better news,
you're delighted about this one.
I'm always happy to talk about my queen, Dolly Parton, a lifelong love of mine. She has once again proven to be just better than everybody else.
And in a way that is very altruistic, so we kind of be mad at her for it. So obviously we're hearing a lot about COVID-19, but we're also thankfully hearing a lot about vaccines, thank God. That is literally the kind of news that is going to pull me through the next 6 to 8 months.
I'm looking at that light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, exactly.
So
this week, a US company called Moderna announced that they had a vaccine for COVID-19 that was 94.5% effective in tackling the virus. The New England Journal of Medicine were the ones who published the report about this. And a lot of eagle-eyed journalists who then fact-checked and said, this is the best fact-checking I've ever gotten to do, noticed that the Dolly Parton COVID-19 Research Fund was one of the groups that had funded this project to get this vaccine together. And they had donated, I think, something like $1 million. So obviously that led to kind of this, I think it was a good news story anyway, but it led to this kind of fun twist now where people were kind of joking, like, Dolly Parton cured COVID. Some people were like,
that's
saying,
not a joke, it's a reality.
People were saying, vaccine, to the tune of Jolene, which is funny as well. And then other people pointed out that obviously Dolly Parton is no stranger to charity. There's her Imagination Library scheme, which actually came to Ireland last year, where she sends books to kind of kids, I think from the age of 4 or 5 up until they hit 13 years.
Yep. So they get a book every month.
So she has has donated to charitable causes for a long time, and she spoke, she gave a statement saying, like, it was, you know, I wanted to put this forward and put money towards this and maybe encourage other people to donate as well. I also think it's significant because Dolly Parton is a country music star. That is still a realm that skews a little bit more conservative, particularly in the US, in terms of how it's perceived and the politics maybe some people involved. And in that space in America, there is this weird anti-science stance, this weird, like, I'm not wearing a mask, blah, 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 blah. And I think it's actually kind of punk of someone like Dolly to go, yeah, science is real. I'm giving it some money. Put a mask on. Let's beat this thing that is in fact real. Because there will be plenty of country stars who would see this almost as political. And she's like, no, 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 no.
She doesn't
put
care.
The money on the table and let's get this popping.
I love her so much because she, you know, aside from her Imagination Library and aside from the many, many charities that she supported over the years, like, you know, Dollywood, the theme park, people kind of joke about it, but she started that theme park to bring tourism to Appalachia, to where she is from, to where she was raised, to give jobs to people from that region where unemployment is absolutely massive, to make sure that her family would always be supported, but not through handouts, through having their own jobs and their own sense of purpose. Like, you know, she has been generous and smart from the get-go. And I saw someone tweet this week, and it was my favorite tweet of the week, where they said, you know, Dolly Parton isn't a billionaire because she chooses not to be. She gives money away. Same. I know. She gives her money away. That's the difference between Dolly Parton, one of the most successful people in music, and the billionaires in music. You know, she's not, you can hoard your money and you can look at it in the bank, or you can use your money and try and actually make a difference in the world. And I'm just so happy that she's being recognized so wonderfully for her efforts this week. It has been a good week to be a Dolly Parton stan.
You're like, that was Dolly Parton Corner on 2FM.
My queen. I just could not love her anymore. Okay, we've got lots more to talk about. We're going to talk about Harry Styles wearing a dress on the cover of Vogue. Stunning. We're going to talk about George Clooney's generosity. We've got stuff in the Vardy v. Rooney case. And a sad news for Little Mix. Also, coming up right after this, I'm going to play you my track of the week. It comes from Milk. I love it. It's called I Hate the Way You're Looking at Me Lately. And it's right after this.
Louise McSherry on 2FM.
With Cadbury Brunch. When you need a proper break, brunch.
That is Milk. I Hate the Way You're Looking at Me Lately. It is my track of the week this week, which of course means it's Irish. And I have to say, I think it is fab. Love a bit of alt pop, Conor Behan.
Yes, Louise McSherry. I too love alt pop. It's like, are you doing some kind of segue?
Of course. I'm always doing a segue. Conor Behan is here. We are talking pop culture and we've got lots to talk about. So let's get stuck in. Harry Styles in a dress on the cover of Vogue. I love that song.
You're like, Madonna's Vogue has been updated for the new whatever millennium we're in. So yes, Harry Styles is on the cover of American Vogue. He is actually the first solo male star to ever have a Vogue cover, which I was kind of surprised by. But when you think about it, there have been men on the cover of Vogue, but it's usually with like as one half of a couple, or it's a
Kim
male,
and Kanye.
Or it's like Diddy with somebody else. So this is the first time that a male performer has been the solo star of US Vogue. He is wearing a Gucci dress on the cover, which of course, you know, causes a stir because we're still in this weird world where if a guy wears a dress, it's somehow outrageous to some people. So
Other
obviously
people think it's incredibly hot.
Exactly. So it created a lot of conversation in general when it arrived, both, I guess, good and bad. Obviously, he has a very rabid online fan base and they will eat up everything he does. So they were excited as well. Of course, the usual kind of American right-wing commentators who, as I would say, trade in online outrage, which is why I'm always like, stop quote-tweeting these people, they're dummies. Ben Shapiro and Candace Owen in particular really went for this cover. Candace Owen did this big, lengthy Twitter thing where she was talking about how this is all part of a plan to feminize our men, saying bring back manly men, while Shapiro called it a referendum on masculinity.
Oh, for God's sake.
Personally, I never want to hear the word referendum again as an Irish person, but that's neither here nor there. So they were going off and saying this has never happened before, and people politely pointed out that men throughout history have worn dresses and pointed to there's periods in history where often men who were rulers and kings, they only wore dresses because it was seen as more powerful, like that it's a cultural thing and things shift all the time. There's also a very interesting conversation about Harry Styles, who's like a cisgender. We don't really know. He doesn't have to define sexuality, but we've never really known if he is or isn't part of the LGBTQ community.
No, we know he's been in relationships with women.
Right. So like this thing of he gets a lot of praise and conversation and a Vogue cover for being a man in a dress, whereas a lot of kind of trans and non-binary people talked about, like, if I present in that way when I leave the house, I'm not getting a Vogue cover. I'm possibly getting a hard time or violence or abuse, etc. And that sort of weird thing where these things, play well to when certain people do them and not when others. There's a non-binary writer and activist called Alok Vayad Menon who wrote a really nuanced and insightful Instagram post about it. They pointed out that Harry should be praised for, quote, flouting gendered fashion norms, but also pointed out that particularly, say, trans people of colour would not get that same praise or that high profile on magazine cover if they did the same thing. So I thought, like, Vayad Menon did a really good way of kind of saying, this is great because we're pushing the conversation forward, but, like, the people who started this conversation don't always get brought along for the ride. Yeah. And I said to
and
a friend...
And let's not forget them.
Yeah, and I also said to a friend of mine, like, you know, Vogue covers still have impact, but, like, now... The currency of a cover is not just selling copies off of a newsstand. It is the social media coverage.
Oh,
it's the attention. And Condé Nast wants to embrace diversity and is also, as a media empire, had a tough year with the conversation around their cooking title, Bon Appetit, and how that handled their kind of staff and the racism allegations and all that kind of thing. So sometimes when these media companies do this kind of quote-unquote diverse moment or edgy moment, like, it is great, but it's also like, who's actually making the money here? It's not the people who kicked this thing off as a kind of resurgence of degendering things. It's actually the big conglomerate who wants to look good for their end of year sales or whatever.
But the pictures are beautiful.
Oh, stunning. Oh, and like, more power to Harry, like, serving it. I will say, I didn't actually, ironically, when you look at the full shoot, the cover photo is probably my least favorite.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a bit drab. And I was, I always wonder, particularly now they're doing very different cover lines of Vogue. They're much more sparse. I was like, I would get this cover if you were going to fill it full of text. I'm like, check one of the other photos.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I would like to see more men in dresses, more men in makeup. More men exploring different avenues of style. It's so much more interesting. Now, let's talk about George Clooney. He's giving, well, he has given his friends $1 million. Millions of dollars. Oh my God. And he's been talking about it again.
Yeah, so he's on the cover of GQ at the moment and he's talking about basically his own generosity. He said he'd why not? Gas yourself up, I guess. Whatever. Rich people are going to do what they're going to do. He tells a story in the magazine that he had 14 close friends that he brought to his house years ago. It was around 2013 when he was about to star in Gravity. He was still single. He didn't have kids. So I guess he was in a different place in his life. And as a kind of gesture of goodwill to friends who had let him sleep on their couches when he was struggling or lent him money when he's broke, he put like $1 million in cash in these like custom backpacks and gave each friend $1 million as a way to say
thank you. Am I right in thinking they were Louis Vuitton backpacks?
One of the articles I read said it was some other brand that's not as high end, but they were like a branded fancy backpack. So like, but I was also like, in contrast to the $1 million, it all costs nothing anyway. Yeah. So I was like, whatever. At that point, why not throw in an LV bag if you wanted to?
Yeah.
He also made a point of saying that when he told this story to a wealthy businessman in Vegas, they were like, why would you do that? And George Clooney was like, why wouldn't I? I was like, wow, rich people competing to be more generous. I love it. Like,
well, I'm just thinking, like, imagine, like, you'd be pretty delighted.
I'm not mad at it.
My friend George is just, he's gotten really famous. It's so weird. And like, I'm going over to his house tonight. And then you're like, oh, you're literally giving me $1 million. Okay. I mean, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I noticed some people are like, what a sign of like spreading the wealth. And some people are like, rich people are so annoying. Like, it's depending on how you look at it, it's either fabulous.
It can
or,
be both, I think.
Yeah. I mean, if it happened to me, would I look it down? Not at all.
Exactly. Literally any of
I'm sticking with you, McSherry. I want that million in a few years.
Oh my God.
The bag on the table.
Sure. Yeah. So much of that money to be made in media in Ireland. Yes. Anyway, let's move on because Vordi versus Rooney has started.
Yes, so of course, about a year ago, October of last year, Colleen Ruby and Rebecca Vardy set the internet ablaze because Colleen Rooney issued this statement on social media saying that for months she had been doing, I mean, the spy games of it all, she had been doing a sting effectively, noticing that stories were coming out about her that were coming from a private Instagram account. And she was like, hang on, I'm going to whittle down who sees my stories to figure out who is leaking these stories. And she claimed in a line that has become part of pop culture, quote, it's ... Rebecca Vardy's account. Now, Rebecca Vardy married to another footballer.
Best day on the internet possibly ever.
But this is what's funny about it. So we all laughed because it was gas and ridiculous and so out of left field. Rebecca Vardy then has sued Colleen Rooney for libel and the case started in the UK High Court this week. So the argument from Vardy's team was that Rooney didn't actually like do that thing where a journalist will say, I've got this claim, I want you to respond to it and say yes, no, how dare you, blah, blah, blah. She just put this out into the world, and that Variety was caused all this distress because she claimed it wasn't true. To say it was her account meant that other people accessed her account and it couldn't have been just her. That's what she's arguing.
Well, I would say, yeah, that was a very conscious thing on Colleen Rooney's part. Like, she definitely had had this checked out, I'd say. And that's why she specifically said it's Rebecca Vardy's account as opposed to it's Rebecca Vardy.
Right. And so that was the argument that Rooney's team were using in court. And it was ruled because Vardy has effectively won this phase of it. They said that doesn't actually work because when people hear it's Rebecca Vardy's account or it's Louise McSherry's account, they don't think it's the team running the social page for Louise or Rebecca. They hear that's their page and they saw it and they leaked it. So Vardy argued my name became a punchline effectively. They talk about, I mean, it's grimly hilarious. I shouldn't laugh, but I found it grimly hilarious that when a new story about the disappearance of Madeleine McCann came up, or a thing about Trump talking about ISIS came up, people would go, it's Rebecca Vardy's account, because it became such a punchline.
It was a meme
used for such random things, and they were kind of arguing this caused her distress. So Vardy has won this first stage of the libel case. Rooney has been ordered to pay nearly £23,000 in damages following the end of the trial. They've agreed to...
What's £23,000 to Colleen Rooney like?
Nothing. So
I mean, I would take it, obviously, but to her...
So they've agreed that this week they'll delay things until February, and they're going to have another attempt to resolve things without going to trial. So this could have legs. This could get us through 2021, is all I'm saying. I want a trial. I want both of them to just come in and looks. And
I want to see the looks.
Glaring at each other. That's what I want.
Absolutely. And before I let you go, in some sad news, Jessie has stepped back from Little Mix.
Yeah, so Jessie Nelson announced, well, through a statement through like the band's PR, said this week that Jessie is taking time off from Little Mix for private medical reasons. They called it extended time off because last week, if you recall, she was meant to be with the girls for the final on their BBC One show and then do the MTV EMAs. She wasn't either. Now she said she's taking a break. There have been tabloid reports that the rest the girls are looking at solo stuff, but they're still very much a band and they support Jessie. It doesn't seem to be there is a falling out and they don't like her. It's more Jessie's having a tough time and she wants to step away. They're still scheduled to go on tour next year. Obviously, whether or not that goes ahead has other, other reasons attached to it, but they're saying the tour will go ahead and Jessie can join it if she feels ready to or able to, but there's no pressure. It's a rare case of a band having each other's backs, I think. I don't think this is a diva thing.
Yeah, no, we just talked about this recently, actually, when Cassie Delaney was on this slot talking about pop culture, and we were saying that that's one of the great things about Little Mix is that they are such a kind of a band of friends, and they seem to have really stayed friends and really united, you know, through the years that they've been together. But I watched Jessie Nelson's documentary that she made for the BBC, where she addressed a lot of the online bullying seems like too small of a word for it, online
harassment.
Abuse and harassment that she had experienced, you know, through being in the public eye. And it was clear that she suffered really badly with anxiety and depression, and she spoke about that in the documentary. And in fact, within the documentary, you saw her struggling to kind of fulfill her duties as a member of the band because of the things that she was experiencing. And like, they haven't said that that's what's going on here, but it does seem like that's a possibility. And it's great to see that she's being supported and that the door is open and all the rest.
And there was an incident, well, it's like a moment earlier on this summer where they did a live lounge appearance for BBC Radio 1 and fans were watching the live stream, and Jessie had a panic attack just before.
Yeah.
And in, obviously it's not great seeing that on camera, but everyone noted that the other two girls immediately said, hey, okay, hold on. They brought her aside and they did the song without her. And Jessie referred to it later and said, we rehearsed it this way. The girls picked up my part and kept going. Like, I genuinely think this is the rare case of A, they're friends, and B, because we have had so many horror stories about pop stars who actually were really going through it and they were made get on that treadmill, sell the album. It's actually nice to have a story of, I need a break and I'll come back, because we actually need to allow these people that grace when they're
in
that position.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And Little Mix are amazing.
That's
and
true.
I hope that Jessie is feeling better, and I hope the break does for her what she needs it to do. Okay, well, my friend Connor, it has been such a delight to have you here. Thank you so much for so astutely bringing us those stories. Your new podcast is out. Tell us about it before I let you go.
It's called Housewives and Me. It's a podcast about why we love The Real Housewives. We have new episodes every Tuesday. We've just had a bunch of great guests this week. Darren Garrahy from 2FM is on talking about Beverly Hills. And the week after, you, Louise McSherry, will be on talking about every Real Housewives franchise under the sun. I listened back to it and you went so deep on so many shows. It's gas. It's must hear if you like Housewives.
I think it was the first time I've ever properly, thoroughly talked about the Housewives, and I very much enjoyed it. Okay, well, look, have a great week, Connor.
You.
And best of luck with that.
The Louise McSharry on 2FM.
With Cadbury Brunch. When you need a proper break, brunch.